La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic. Les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic. Glou, 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 font tous les dindons. Et la jolie cloche ding-ding-don. Mais boum, quand notre cœur...
Hey, bonjour Rugby Friends and welcome to French Rugby Connection with moi, Véronique Lindu, and...
Moi, Mike Pierce.
How are you, Mike? You okay?
Yeah, pretty good, actually. Recovering from the Six Nations launch yesterday, which took place in my living room.
Oh, yes, the same with me. And this week, you know, on top of talking about the Six Nations, we'll talk about top 14, any other business relating to French rugby news, a rugby joke and rugby French lesson. And this week I had a chat with the president, the current president of Stade Français, Thomas Lombard.
Oh, wow, big stuff.
You bet. It's all about French rugby connections, my friend.
It is.
And Thomas used to play for Racing, then Stade Français, where he won four cups, and then Vostre. And in between, he was capped for France 12 times. So I'm sure you will enjoy the chat I had with him. Anyway, let's start with the Six Nations, my friend. So, yes, just like me, it took place in your living room as well.
Yeah, I know. For listeners who don't know, the Six Nations launch happens every January, and it's always in some swish place like the Hurlingham Club or in some brewery. And, you know, for us journalists, it's the highlights of the year. We get free food, free drink, there's free Guinness. And, you know, you can really mingle with the stars, with the captains, with the coaches. You can speak to them off the record. But, of course, due to COVID, it was cancelled and it was all done, you know, on Zoom. And,
yes.
And amazingly, it went pretty well, apart from the Irish contingent who couldn't hear anything at all for half an hour. But, no, it was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yes, I concur. You know, in the previous years, it was either in a posh hotel near Twickenham or, like you said, in a brewery in North London.
And yeah, again, sending journalists to do work in a brewery is a dangerous, dangerous thing.
And yeah, it's a great, it's probably the event of the year in which we know we can rub our shoulders with the head coach and and the captains, and meet the larger media rugby family, you know, from all walks of life. So anyway, let's start with France.
Okay, yeah, I spoke to Fabien, as indeed you did. I was interested to know, you know, everything is gearing up in France to the Rugby World Cup in 2023, as you know, and I was wondering whether Galtier and the players were finding it more of a pressure or more of a motivation, and he said actually it's a bit of both. We're enjoying the pressure, we're enjoying the journey to the World Cup, but it's also a huge motivation to keep on improving day by day, because we know at the end of it, you know, we've got this marvelous carrot that Rugby World Cup on home soil. So, they're really fired up for the tournament and really looking forward to it. And I would imagine with the way results have gone, with the strength and depth they've got, that they're going to be very confident.
Yeah, absolutely. So I asked the question to Charles and Fabien as well, regarding, you know, the fact that last year, nobody thought about France as being a top team, but this year they are very much a top of the class. And and Charles replied, did say we need to reach for excellence at that tournament. It's up to us to keep this going and keep asking for more work and more improvement. And it's absolutely necessary for the level we're playing at, particularly because we're presenting our country and our supporters. And I asked Fabien as well, you know, the question you asked him last year. So do you think you've achieved your objectives? You know, have the French people fallen in love with rugby again? And it's getting there, but it's nice. We know a very, very good team on the pitch, but it's time to earn some silverware.
Yeah, I think, they open up. They've also got the dream start, you know, poor old Italy, who always usually bottom of the pile, you know, every team really wants them first up to get things going. It is in Rome, but you'd fancy France to have a nice run out there in the sunshine and get their tournament on track.
And, you know, in order to train as well, they are right now, they are located, they're based in Nice.
Yeah.
Their training ground, they are in a hotel just in front of the in front of La Promenade, according to my sources.
Yeah.
It's a private hotel, so it's only the bleu were there with their coaching staffs. They're very strict. They're remaining their bubbles, you know, being tested on a regular basis. You know, their gym is being disinfected. So it's very, very, very rigorous. And in terms of staff, guess what? Who do you think joined the staff yesterday?
Oh, let me think. Who joined the staff yesterday?
You will never guess.
No.
Jérôme Garcès.
Oh, the referee.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So Jérôme retired in 2019, and he joined the Les Bleus as a coach.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Because he would help with their discipline. Because as you know, on average, you know, the Les Bleus get about 10 penalties.
Yeah, he's going to have his work cut out, I think.
Yes, so the French team is getting more and more frightening. And it was good to see Charles Olivion as well being back to his fitness, because after, I think, 12 minutes or 18 minutes last Sunday, he suffered concussion when he was playing against Stade Français.
Yeah.
So it was good to see him. So
it's interesting about the referee points, because I know England have been working with Wayne Barnes. I know Wales have had Nigel Owens in camp to go through stuff. So, the refereeing side and assessing the referees seems to be just as important as actually looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the opposing team. Just shows how rugby's developed, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So it's a very, very shrewd move, you know, from Les Bleus. Another great stroke, you know, from Fabien and his teams. So let's wait and see. Not very long, 9 days to go before the match kickoff. Obviously, you know, 8 players, you know, that were part of the original 37 squad had to declare a forfait. That means, you know, they are not able to play. Question mark regarding Grégory Altrit, very, very good player. He had a scan on Monday on his knee, but he should be with the squad on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought that there was some sort of dissenting voices about that, because he left the French squad last week and then he played 80 minutes for La Rochelle at the weekend.
I saw that as well. I was quite surprised. I was about to ask you the question, but obviously he had conversation with his opponents.
Yeah, he said it's an ongoing knee injury and he can still play with it. And he had the approval of Galtier and the management to play, but he wasn't 100%, and he said he wouldn't have been able to play at 100%, but playing for the club is obviously slightly less strenuous. And there was no risk of making the injury worse. So, you know, he played a full 80 minutes.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's, yeah. But right now, you know, they are training very, very hard. That's what the feedback I got from Fabien Galtier, a high intensity team.
Yeah.
And I saw a video, I think, on Instagram.
Yes, yeah, I saw that.
From France Video, and you could hear Rafa Ibanez saying, vite,
yeah.
quick, which it's all about speed as well, you know, it's about stamina and, you know, provoking and, you know, showing some flair and creating some chaos out of an organized situation on the pitch. But anyway, so Italy, I really like Franco Smith and his team, and I would love to see Italy at least win a game.
Yeah, well, they've got 3 home games this year, so, you know, they might fancy their chances a bit. And there were definite signs of improvement last year, particularly in the first half against England, where they held them. And you know, they played pretty well against France in Paris, and you know, there are definite signs of improvement. So yeah, let's hope. It'd be great to see Italy get a win, give them some confidence, yeah, as long as it's not against Wales.
Delighted. Yeah. So Franco Smith said, you know, yesterday that he's got some young guys, actually some UNCA players that that have joined the Azzurri. From Zebre, he's got Daniele, Rimpelli, Marco, Manfredi, Moliano, as a look, Riccardo Faretto, and from Benetton, Juan Ignacio Brex. So new blood, and those guys are bringing lots of energy and positivity that the Italian team need. As you know, out of the Italian team, I think one was player, forgot his name, decided not to play, not to be part of the Six Nations this year. Matteo Minozzi.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he has decided not to take part for family reason. It's that, you know, 8 weeks away to being stuck in a bubble. It wasn't for him.
Yeah, understandably.
Yeah. So let's see. So it's positive. The objective for the Italian team is to improve, learn from their mistake, get control, and last longer.
Sure.
Than 60 minutes. Yeah. Usually they start really well.
Yeah.
And then in the last 20 minutes, they kind of drop everything off, and which is a shame, but they're aware of those weaknesses. And you've got a new English staff coming over to Italy, to Benetton, Mr. Monsieur, Signore Gustard.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Gustard joining Benetton.
Is he actually joining them, or is that just the rumor at the moment?
No. He's starting from the summer.
Wow. Oh, that's a great coach. I mean,
and there is another WASP coach as well. Andrea Mazzi from WASP is going to join Benetton as well.
Great.
So wait and see. Yes, I want to see Italy win. I like Italy. So, Wales, my friends.
Yes, Wales. What can we say about Wales? dismal Six Nations last year. And, you know, looking for huge improvements this year. I spoke to Wayne Pivac, the coach, and Alan Wynne-Jones, and they were saying about, you know, how strange it is playing in front of empty crowds. And, you know, I think Wales are one of those nations that thrive on passion. And, you know, you can visibly see the difference. 75,000 packed crowd at the Principality has on their performance. And, you know, I really think it's a big miss for them. It's a big miss for everybody. But I think for a nation that sort of thrives on passion, it's a big loss. But, you know, Wayne Pivac said it is what it is. We try and replicate the match day protocols and match day habits as best we can. And really that opening match against Ireland on the opening Sunday of the tournament is going to be make or break, because very often when Wales win their first game, they get momentum, they play well, and, you know, more often than not, they've been challenging for the tournament at the end. But lose that first game and you're playing catch up straight away. But, you know, it's a tough one because Wales have got Ireland and England at home. So France away at the end of the tournament, there aren't too many easy games. And even Italy away is going to be a tough one. But I guess they just got to focus, same old cliche, you know, one game at a time. And
they all say that.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? You know,
which is fair enough, I suppose.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, the danger is, years ago, Wales would have one brilliant win in a season. They'd beat England, and then they'd get so carried away that they'd lose every other game. So, you know, the game has moved on, and it is really, that is the mantra. And it'll be interesting to see, because the jury's still out about Wales and about their coach, Wayne Pivac. You know, it has to be said, they've had a dismal year since COVID struck. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how they hit the ground running in a couple of weeks' time.
And in terms of the squad as well, they have a mixture of experience and young blood as well. So it should be an interesting mix.
Yeah, the danger is, the problem is at the moment that Wales is sort of best players or world-class players don't seem to be hitting top form, particularly those playing for the Scarlets, Jonathan Davis. And, you know, it's a bit of a conundrum. They're, some of their players may be just going over the hill a bit, although I wouldn't tell them to their face. So it'd be interesting to see how he juggles this, you know, youth and experience. And yeah, it's going to be a fascinating tournament for a Welsh public. I think it's going to be a roller coaster ride. And, you know, we never get too excited because we're a pessimistic nation where it's either feast or famine in Wales. And let's hope it's feast this year.
Okay. What about England? What do you think? I mean, I think England is very determined to win Six Nations again. That's a must objective, you know, from Eddie Jones. But it's, you know, again, it's a one game at a time. It's going to be very hard, you know, like poker type of responses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Eddie's great, isn't he? He's great value. And of course, they're going to be in this 28 man squad bubble. The players won't be leaving anywhere, which going back to the Welsh for a minute, their English-based players are going to have to leave camp and report for duty with their clubs in England. And that's a concern over the COVID situation. But back to England, you know, you think they've got to be one of the favourites, one of the wealthier nations, one of the biggest pool of players to choose from. They've lost some players through injury, but those that come in are equally competent, if not better. And England, of course, open against Scotland, a Calcutta Cup opener, and that's going to be a fascinating game. But I think England will be there or thereabouts at the end of the tournament for sure.
Yes, yeah. And ask, you know, Ed, you know, which team, which games were he thought were the most important in the Six Nations. And he mentioned the Scotland game, you know, which was came a bit as a surprise for me. But obviously, I think it comes from the tension between the Scottish and the English team, you know, regarding the Calcutta team. It's always hard for any teams to win at Murrayfield, but this time, you know, they have no supporters, so it should be
Mate. Is it Twickenham as well? So that's going to make it.
Ah, I beg your pardon. Yeah, I just had a blonde moment. No, sorry about that.
It's I know it's a weird world, isn't it? But the Calcutta Cup, you know, fascinating story behind that. I don't know if you know it. I'll just go through it briefly. The Rugby Club of Calcutta, which was many years ago, basically sort of English based players in India, they went bankrupt. And they melted down all the rupees, all the coins in their fund and made a trophy out of it. And that was presented to be played between England and Scotland every year. I thought you'd fall asleep there for a minute.
No, that's okay. I was absorbing that new rugby knowledge to put into my brain first. It's really, really good. Some things to remember, you know. When I'm invited to a Six Nations dinner one day, hey guys, do you know about la Calcutta Cup? And so on. They say, what Calcutta Cup? Anyway, so Scotland, you know, Scotland, Stuart Hawke was there with his head coach. What do you make of Scotland? You know, they haven't done too well lately.
Scotland are one of those teams, aren't they? I mean, who will forget that match at Twickenham where they were, 30 something points down at half time? And came back to lead in the second half, a mercurial second half, orchestrated by Finn Russell. And then the match ended in a draw. But, you know, the way it used to be is which French team will turn up. I think it's the case now which Scotland team will turn up. I definitely think they've got the players, the personnel in place. I think consistency is a problem, but I think they'll more than pull their weight this year. And a big worry for me is Wales have to go to Murrayfield on February the 13th. And I think Scotland will really fancy their chances against Wales, as they will against most of the other nations, I think.
Yes. I mean, they all have to have that same positive frame of mind. Yeah. Otherwise, there's no point. But yeah, I agree with you. I think they now have the label of being unpredictable. Yeah. It used to be France, but now France has become much more consistent and rigorous, you know, thanks to the new management. Ireland.
Yeah, we had a problem with Ireland because it was the first up in the chat room and there was no link. So we lost the entire interview for half an hour. But, I mean, Ireland are obviously going to be there or thereabouts with Andy Farrell in charge. They're a tough team to beat, particularly in Dublin. And you know, their opening game, as we mentioned earlier, is in Cardiff against Wales. And I think, as is the case for Wales, it will be a tournament-defining match for them. I think if they win that one, you know, they could go on to good things. And they're the sort of team that can certainly win the tournament if things go their way.
We'll see. I fancy my chances for France to win this time because I think would be very well deserved. But yeah, everybody has a standard chance.
Yeah, and a wet and windy day in Dublin. You know, that's a great leveler. And I know you guys don't like playing in the wet.
Not really. No. Carry on.
All nations covered. All right, there may not be crowds this year, but I think everyone feels that bit of excitement as well. You know, now the days are getting a little bit longer and the tournament's creeping up. I think we're all getting that little bit of nervousness and excitement. And in these difficult times, it will be a great distraction throughout February and March. And hopefully by the time the tournament ends, you know, a lot of us will have been vaccinated. Hopefully this dreadful pandemic will be at least under control and we can move on to better things and start thinking about crowds coming back, start looking forward to next year's launch with Nibbles and Guinness and, you know, everybody having a great reunion. But in the meantime, you know, what a wonderful, wonderful tournament. And I'm so glad that it's going ahead.
I think it's the best tournament in the world, personally. That's very much, you know, it's one of the most ancient as well. So it's good. You know, we put a smile on people's face and we really need that in that dire time. And that reminds me, I ask a question, you know, to Fabien Gatier, you know, I read that Eddie Jones, you know, and I met with Arsène Wenger. And Sir David Brailsford, you know, cycling for Sky Knights under the sponsorship of Ineos, and the head of the English cycling team as well, you know, to understand, you know, how to stay at the top. And Fabien, say, do you have any inspiring, you know, speakers that would come to your camp, or I mean, at least, you know, via video? And I mentioned Arsène Wenger, and he said, "Oh, I know Arsène very well," and so on. So, you know, he knows everybody, obviously, at that level. And then I mentioned that maybe you could have Jean Dujardin as well to entertain. I told you Jean Dujardin is a number one actor in France. He plays in The Artist.
Black and white guy.
Yeah, and then the spoof series, and a bit like Dean, okay. You know. And he said, "How do you know that? You seem to know a lot of stuff." But I just deducted, you know, because Jean Dujardin was at the World Cup launch in December. I saw a picture of him and Fabien. So I deducted that maybe he would be there. But it looks, they need, you know, because you have to think about those young guys. Being stuck, you know, for 2 months in a bubble, you know, with the same rugby family. After a while, you know, it's going to be hard on their moral and so on. So they need some time to relax. And every evening, apparently, they play pétanque.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in which Cyril Bay is very, very bad at it, and also powerful force of quatre. I don't know what you call it in
English.
What's it called
again?
But force of cat, powerful.
Oh, I don't know. That's beyond me. That is.
It's a game from the 70s. You know that, but I don't know.
I was doing other things in the 70s, not playing board games.
playing rugby. But anyway, so can't wait for the rugby to start again, Six Nations, in 9 days now. Hey, bonjour rugby friends. Today I'm really happy to speak with Thomas Lombard. Bonjour Thomas.
Bonjour Véronique.
Ça va bien?
Oui, ça va très bien, merci.
Excellent. So to refresh the memory of our listeners, let me recap your career. So you were born on the 5th of July 1975 in Le Chesnay near Versailles, in the southwest of Paris. You began playing rugby with Racing in June 1992. Then you moved to Stade Français in 1997, where you spent 7 years. In 2004, you felt it was time to experience a new kind of rugby, and you played for Worcester for 3 years before finishing off your rugby career with Racing from 2007 to 2008. In terms of your successes, so you won, how many cups did you win with Stade Français? Was it four?
For the national team, I get 13 caps.
Wow. Okay. For the international, you played for Les Bleus 13 times. And for Stade Français, you won 4 times the Brennus.
Yeah, exactly. We won the league 4 times, plus played the final of the Heineken Cup in 2001 in Parc des Princes. Fortunately, lost against Leicester Tigers. And we also won the cup in 1999.
Wow. After your rugby career, you got very, very fortunate, and you became a consultant and a commentator for RMC Radio and Canal Plus. And in November 2019, you became president, general manager of Stade Français. So it was back to memory lane for you. And Stade Français is doing pretty well. You know, last time I looked, you were ranked 6, I believe, 6 or 7 in the in the top 14. So well done. It's very good. So Thomas, let's start from the beginning. So you were born in Le Chesnay near Versailles, which is a very, very nice place to live, not far from Le Château, I believe.
Yes.
And you started playing rugby at the age of 13. So why rugby and not football? Because rugby is not really a sport which is played a lot in that area of Paris.
I started playing rugby because of my dad. He used to tell me explain me all the stories he had when he used to play rugby. And as a kid, it was something very special for me to listen to my dad's story. So I felt that one day I could take the same way as him. And I was playing tennis, which is not a collective game. I've also tried to play football, but I was not gifted at all for football. So finally, I ended up in a small city, a rugby club called Le Chesnay. And I had a very good experience with some lads for my age, and I stayed in rugby for 20 years.
Wow, what a great start! So, which position did you play when you started playing rugby?
Well, I had some qualities for running. So, even if I was tall, they wanted me to play in the forward, but my dad said no. It's better if you play backwards. So I start playing. When you play for the academy for kids, young kids, you don't really have any position. So it was a sort of a winger, fullback, or center. And then when I grew up, My first position was fullback. Then I moved on the wing and to finish in the center.
I see. And you mentioned you started playing tennis. And you know what? I was speaking with Andrew Mertens mm-hmm. a few weeks ago. And he said to me he had the same story as you. You know, he was really good at playing tennis. So maybe there is a link between being good at tennis and rugby. It's all about, you know, the speed of reaction. And on the anticipation as well of where the ball will go. So that's a good thing. So you liked it so much. You liked playing rugby so much that you went to a very prestigious college called Canal, in which I think Jacques Bossuge.
La Canal. La Canal. Yeah.
La Canal. And you studied rugby and general studies as well.
Yeah, because in France we don't have the same system as in England or in Great Britain. We don't have studies and sports. Sports is very marginal in France. You only have 3 hours a week of sports, and if you want to do sports, you have a sort of mixed. It's called sports and studies. So that was the only opportunity if you wanted to play and to train a bit more in rugby, to keep on studying and to practice my passion. So I decided to go there. And as you said, La Canal has a fantastic reputation as a college. And, many French international went through this system of studies and school to achieve some great career.
Yes, I think Serge Betsen went to the Sport d'études in Biarritz.
Yes, he does.
That was a good setting. And you got spotted by Racing when you were still a very young player.
Yeah, at this time, Racing was the number one club in Paris. Stade Français was in very down in low divisions. So you don't have any other opportunity. If you wanted to play some high level rugby, you needed to go to sign to Racing. So that's why I leave the suburbs of Paris of Paris to go to Colombes to the former Racing Stadium, the famous stadium Yves du Manoir, and I started to play with the legends of the sports. At the age of 17 years old, Franck Ménel, Laurent Cabane, Xavier Blond, Laurent Benegès, all these international players that won the league and played for the national team under the color of Racing.
And they were a very eccentric team. It was called, I believe, they used to play with bow tie, pink bow tie.
Exactly.
I think during one half time at final, they drank champagne as well. It was what they call, you know, les années showbiz.
Yeah.
The showbiz years, you know, they were the only team that were.
Yeah.
That were.
The backline, the backline of Racing with Jean-Baptiste Lafont, Franck Ménel, Eric Blanc, Philippe Guillard. Geoffrey Abadi, they used to have a lot of fun, and they play with no pressure. And sometimes people say, oh, they're arrogant, but it was not the case. They just wanted to show a different image as the traditional rugby players. And as you know, rugby starts in the forwards. So the backs could have fun, but in this time when you play against Racing, they were massive in the forwards, and I would say that all the forwards players probably have less fun than the backs, as you can imagine.
It was the back started. I think it's the same in every rugby team, you know, the front pack are always the naughty boys. And you forgot to mention as well, Brett Gosper as well was playing in Racing.
Yes, but Brett Gosper played in Racing in the years 85 to 88. So I was not at Racing at this time, but obviously I have some memories of Brett, because I was watching racing on television, and I used to go to the stadium to watch games, but I didn't play with Brett at racing.
All right, but racing must have been such a great time for you, because you know they were the, like you were saying, the way rugby was organized in the 90s, it was very much a game that was played in the southwest of France, in a town like Biarritz, Agen, Perpignan, Béziers, and a little bit in the Massif Central, you know, with Aurillac, Montferrand, and so on. So it was very nice. It was very positive, you know, for a Parisian club, which is very, very old, actually. One of the, I think Racing is the most,
the oldest club. Yeah, with Stade Français. Yeah. 1882 for racing and 1883 for Stade Français.
Yes, so they followed each other. Fabi came from the UK, I suppose. You know, Fabi, some English people who started importing rugby in Paris. But from the book I read, you had a great time as well. You used to go to some prestigious places, such as it was a private club called, it's a Lagardère club now.
La Croix-Catalan.
Yes, La Croix-Catalan. Mm-hmm. So some good time was used to rub shoulders with some celebrities. And you were like a mini celebrity in Paris.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. It's a very elitist club in Paris. But I mean, the whole club, because racing was not only a rugby club. There are so many sports under racing colors, like football, like tennis, like swimming pool. So it was a mix of different sportsmen and sportswomen, and also some members of a very prestigious club. So as rugby players, we had access to these special places in Paris, and so we used to have a lot of fun. And at this time, rugby was a non-professional sport. So, of course, training and winning culture was important. But you had another life as a student or as a banker or doctor or lawyer or anything, plumber. So the way people live their rugby was much different than now, where rugby is professional and they have to focus only on their practice.
Yes, So they had to do two jobs, the job of a rugby man and also a job of a full-time job of being, like you were saying, I think for Brett, he was working in an advertising agency.
Havas Sport.
That's right. He was doing really, really well there. And others, we were following the same pattern. So, yeah, it probably gives some responsibilities, but obviously it's less, you are slightly, physically, you are less apt, maybe. It's there are some pros and cons about the professional rugby, but we'll talk about that a bit later. So La Croix-Catalan, great memory, I suppose, for you. And you played for Nîmes one day when you were playing in Racing and
In Stade Français.
Ah, in Stade Français.
Yeah, in 1998, I think. You mean that day I scored four tries for Français?
Yes. So tell me about that. Who was watching you? Who were watching you in the crowd?
I don't have a clue. I can't remember.
No, but, it was Bernard Arthur.
Ah, it was my coach.
Max Gazzini.
Bernard was my coach at Stade Français, and Max Gazzini was the owner and chairman of Stade Français. So it was my probably fifth or sixth game in the main team for Stade, and I had the opportunity to score four tries, and from that day the coaches from the national team and stuff. There were a lot of noise surrounding that the fact that I scored those four tries. And 2 months after, I was picked for the national team to play Argentina for the autumn test.
Wow. That's brilliant. Four tries in a game, that's a feast.
It doesn't happen so often, but four, it's something that can happen. Five or six, which I've never achieved, is something very special, I can imagine.
Four is brilliant, but so le Stade Français, it was very much a very important part of your life, you know. So how did you get spotted by Max Gazzini and Bernard Laporte? You were playing in Racing, and how did the move happen?
Because we played a cup game. We had a very young team at Racing, and we get qualified for the cup, and we had to travel to Jean Bouin to Stade Français to play. Very experimented team of Stade Français. And I had a good game against Stade Français. And straight after, Bernard Laporte came to me and said, "Oh, Thomas, what about signing for Stade Français next season?" I was surprised about that. And it took me a while to decide, but finally I said maybe it's time to jump in the train and to change, because the line for Racing was decreasing. Racing was relegated from top division to Division One, and Stade Français was increasing a lot with all the energies from Bernard Laporte and Max. Trying to set up an incredible team, and I decided to sign for Stade, fortunately.
Yes, and it happened in a very, very interesting way. I believe you went to Rue de la Guisarde in the 6e arrondissement, called colloquially Rue de la Soif, because it's full, it's a thirsty street, because it's lined up with bar. And you had a drink with Max and Bernard Laporte. They had to convince you, and finally you signed a contract on the car. Right, you wrote the contract on the bonnet of Max Gazzini's cars. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. This is a very special place. I'm sure that lots of English supporters and players know Saint-Germain-des-Prés in Paris, which is exactly like Richmond can be in Twickenham, which is the place you have to go after the game. So when there's international rugby, Six Nations played in Paris, all the supporters travel to Saint-Germain-des-Prés to have some drinks in bars and discotheque and stuff, just to have fun and enjoy and celebrate. And we used to travel there after games, and that's probably why I met Bernard Laporte and Max there one night, and they called me and said, "Oh, Thomas, we need to talk. And after 2 hours of talks, I decided to sign the contract. So Max said to me, "Oh, I've got a contract in my boot. So if you can go with me to my car, we can sign the contract." And that's how it happened.
I really like the resourcefulness of Max Gazzini. Such an extraordinary, you know, person. Amazing. Oh, it's yes, we'll talk about Max a bit later, but it definitely changed your Max Mascazzini and Bernard Laporte, probably the one who changed your rugby destiny in that professional era. Mm. So you started playing with some really good players as well, some legends, you know, some actually they were a team of Mavericks, if you know what I mean. Yeah. You know, they were teams of people of different personalities, strong characters such as Vincent Moscato, Christophe Dumouni, Christophe Dominici, and others, I'm sure. Tell me more about how was it your first few weeks at Stade Français. How did it go?
Honestly, it was a very special mixed of individual. Some of them, but not many of them, had international careers. But it's probably something that deserved to Max Guazzini. He had a sort of flair to pick the right individuals to play for Stade, and he made a lot of efforts to connect all these people coming from different areas of France, different club, different culture, all together, and we very quickly become a very successful team, and we achieve something that nobody achieved before, and that nobody will probably achieve now, that we get promoted from Division One to top division, and we won the league. It's like it's like this year, who gets promoted last year from London Irish. It's like if London Irish win the Premiership at the end of the season.
Yes,
which it's probably something unexpected, and that won't happen. Even if I wish London Irish to win the Premiership, but it's an amazing achievement and an amazing experience. And during those first months, all these guys connected so well together that they became better rugby players. And people like Franck Comba, Christophe Dominici, myself, Christophe Juillet, and Christophe Lossuc, and a lot of others became international rugby players because of Max, because of Stade Français, and of course because of Bernard Laporte.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. Max Guazzini had the Midas effect, you know, the magic touch,
the mojo,
that instinct. Yeah, the mojo. You're exactly to pick up the right player. Very, very strong instinct doesn't happen very often.
No.
He did really well. And I read in your book the first away trip for you when you started. You went to London for a week, and you had to share a room with your opposite, Vincent Moscato. You were a young player, you had to share the room with Vincent Moscato, who was. Tell me more about Vincent. He's very famous now in the rugby world, but. He comes from the southwest as well.
Yeah, he comes from Gaillac, near Toulouse, near Castres.
Right.
He's one of my best mates, so I can only be positive with Vincent. He's so friendly and he's so funny. He's a nice bloke. He's a nice bloke. I've got a massive respect because the way he deals with his career after rugby is phenomenal. So everybody knows now because of his show on the radio. He's doing some cinemas, his theater. He's and everyone loves him. So it's amazing the popularity of Vincent. He can say horrible things, but people will say, "Oh no, it's okay. It's Vincent Moscato. He's allowed to say that."
Right. Okay. Now it was funny to read in your book. You know, at the beginning was a bit awkward. You know, you didn't really speak to each other.
No, he was pissed. Then, he was pissed to be with me. He said, "Baby, I don't know him. He's coming from racing. He's 20, 21 years old. I have nothing to do with Thomas, but please give me Serge Chimon or give me one of my mates." And it was obviously the decision of Bernard Laporte to connect individual all together. He didn't want the group to split with the one who were friends and the one who don't know to stay separate. And after 24 hours, we get on very well, and we ended up friends for life.
Oh, that's great. So you became 4 times champion of France. You know, like you were saying, it was a great achievement because you were bottom of the league. And from there, you know, you moved up. Which Champions Cup do you remember the most? Which one was special?
You mean European Cup or league games?
League game, I beg
the first
pardon.
One. The yes. First one is probably it's like a, you know, your first time with a girl. you go to Stade de France, and obviously it was so surprising to have Stade Français for the last game of the season playing against such a great team of Perpignan. No one was expecting us to be there. So. Yeah, it's a great memory. But every single time we won the league, there's something you can remember, something special on the day or on the preparation or on the season that make it special.
Yes. How did you celebrate? Do you still remember?
As most of the team do. We do probably a week of parties and beers and stuff. You know, when football teams or national team, of course, when they achieve something and then when they want silverware, they used to go to the Champs-Élysées. So there's a sort of trip through the city, in a bus, where you present the trophy and stuff.
Yes.
So, some of the guys at the club decided that if we were winning that final against Perpignan, we should do the same. So we ended up in a bus around, let's say, 11 at night in the Champs-Élysées. Yes. People were watching us said, "Who's that? What? What are they fucking doing in that bus, screaming and showing a trophy?" No one knows because rugby was not so popular. Stade Français was not so popular. And the Bouclier Brennus, the trophy, was only known by the one who follow rugby. So it was not, it was very, I wouldn't say it wasn't comfortable to, but it's a bit embarrassing to celebrate something that with people who doesn't care.
Yeah, well, at least, you know, you provided some entertainment, you know, for the tourist and for the man and his dog. And okay, but yeah, it was the beginning of the era. So it was 1998. And afterwards, 2000, during your time there, you won in 2000, the League Cup, Le Brennus, 2000, 2003 and 2004. So wow, must be very, very good memory, your best years in rugby in Stade Français. Any anecdote you can mention to me? I know that there was one time when the team didn't get on so well with a coach and you decided to manage yourself.
Yeah.
And you lost a game.
Bernard, I have to say that Bernard Laporte was a central personality at the club, and when he was called up by the federation to coach the national team at the end of the season at the end of the year 99, so he left the club through the middle of the season to take charge the national team, and for every players. We were so close with him. We were so dependent on his strong management and stuff. So we get a bit lost. And of course, Max Guazzini picked another coach. But arriving after Bernard Laporte was so hard and difficult. So after 3 months, we said, "Oh, Max, we do not get on very well with George. His name was George Coste. So maybe we should be independent and train ourselves.
Okay, la révolution française.
Like French français. People, you know, never happy, always contest, always complain. And
yes,
surprisingly, Max said, "Okay, guys, I will accept that. I will say George to sideline. I will sideline George, and you will take your responsibilities." And try to achieve something. And like fairy tales, we ended up in Stade de France and we won the league against Colomiers. But that's the history only reminds fairy tales. And the year after,
yes.
2 years after, we tried to do the same thing with another coach. And unfortunately, or fortunately, we failed. And it shows that sometimes there's a bit of luck. And you see, there's the circumstances helps you to achieve. Yes. But in most of the situation, you need a coach, you need a team, and you need someone who shows the way. And this guy is the coach. That's it.
That's right. Yeah, like the ref. But what a few anecdotes, you know. So when you auto-manage yourself, when you self-manage your team, do you play against, was it Aurillac, and you really, really got smashed, and you were all disappointed, and you finished the night in you drown your sorrows in vodka and so on. But then, you know, it really bonded the team because everybody mentioned, you know, emptied their bags and stay on their chairs.
I don't like to do the promotion of drinking session. This is not the idea, but
this is rugby.
What we have to say is that sometimes when there's so much problem around the team, you need to talk. And there's two manners of organizing talks. You can do it in a meeting, a traditional meeting room, and you can also go on the piece and let's see what happened. But as you mentioned, we choose the second option.
But it worked because then the next game, you never lost any games and you won the league. So somehow that was very good. Any anecdotes you can tell me about your time in Stade Français?
There's so many. To be honest, we had a tremendous time. Every single day, something used to happen here. And it's part of the legend of Stade Français. There's so many rugby players who didn't play for Stade. Can tell you stories they've heard about Stade Français, and most of them are false. But it's good. It's good to let people think that we've been living like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were, I suppose, did you feel like when you went to Stade Français play, did you feel like, yes, today I'm going to have great fun because of the likes of my teammates, which became really like a extended family for you?
True. We did not take things seriously. And on the other hand, we do not take us seriously as well, you see?
Seriously. Yes, absolutely. So, and you had such different characters, you know, coming from different walks of life, different background, different socioeconomic background. And I wrote it down. I'm going to say that in French, but and then I will translate it. It's in your book, you mentioned le rugby berceur d'un formidable métissage social, qui parvient mieux que tout autre à faire volatiliser les clivages que l'on soit comme Thomas, fils de psychothérapeute, ou Guillaume, fils d'ouvrier mm-hmm. chez Renault, ou encore Michael, fils de pilote d'avion chez Air France. And it is so, so true. That's what I love about rugby, because it's got so many different types of, first of all, people, because you can be tall, short, heavy, and socio-economic mm-hmm. backgrounds really do not matter. So that's the beauty of rugby. It's a very inclusive sport with lots of respect, hard work, courage, humility. And at the end, you know, you behave like hooligans on the pitch, and even worse than that, sometimes criminals, I suppose. But at the end of the game, you all shake hands. And supporters never ever fight.
This is the cement of people for rugby. First of all, this is a fighting sport, probably the only collective fighting sports. So some things need to happen between people. It's impossible to put your body on the line for someone that you don't know. Or, you know, you need to feel for people around you in the team. That's very important. And this is, it will never change, because this is rugby. And, it's so important to understand that when you've got successful teams, you've got incredible, bunch of lads all together. And I don't mean they are all friends, but there's a sort of pathway and a rules that everyone is respecting and considering. And wherever you come from, now you've got some international players coming from Fiji, from Australia, England, Ireland, Georgia, Romania. There's so many different culture. You need to have that to settle a sort of a pact or agreement all together, all those values from the team and stuff. But I have a point which is for me very important now, and I can observe this now in the club. So players and youngsters are still different, but unfortunately, the way we manage them, creating some moods when you put all the players, they go through academies in France. They don't show mm-hmm. Any interest to studies and stuff. They are all the same. They are all the same, because they are all in the same boat, trying to get a professional contract. And they don't show any other interest. And the responsibility is immense to the club that don't encourage them to show interest to studies, to politics, to whatever. They say to them, oh, no, you just need to focus on rugby. But unfortunately, if you want to make better people, you need to open them their eyes. And you need to show them what is the world, and that's why they need to have some other experience in the same time as playing rugby.
I agree with you 100%. It's very important for them to be switched to reality, because being a rugby man is okay. You earn a substantial amount of money, but you are not a footballer. And you have to think about your career, and from a mental point of view as well, you need to occupy your free time as well with something. I mean, I met Maru Itoje a few years ago when he was a young player. Nobody knew about him in at Saracen. And he was, he was studying for a degree. And I think finished his degree only 2 or 3 years ago. I really missed that. But in at Saracen, for instance, they really made sure that players had external interests. For instance, Nigel Ray, Well, you can think of whatever you want, but you know, it did help some mm-hmm. players in the venture, such as Brad Barrett. You know, helped him with his Tika Tongo ventures and so on. But yeah, it's very important. I agree with you. I think maybe the new generation is not aware of the importance.
This is probably one of the reasons of the success of Saracens, is because they have, first of all, good players, but because of the way they live outside rugby, they become better people. And better people make better players, not the contrary, yes. Which is what we are thinking now. Or we used to think here in France. We say, oh, if we do better player, we will make better people. It's not true, unfortunately. So we are heading mm-hmm. in the wrong direction. That's why I'm trying to change things here in my club at Stade Français.
Yes, yeah. You need to go after the emotional part. I mean, the human part of rugby. So after Stade Français, you remain 7 years, very successful years. Four Leagues Cup, one final at the Heineken Cup, and then London Cold, not London.
Worcester Cold, yeah.
Cold. Tell me more about it.
To be honest,
maybe it was time for you to make a move.
Yeah,
and you thought, England,
because,
England, that's
because
it,
when
here
you
I
spend,
come.
So many years in the same place, sometimes you start to only complain and see the negative things instead of enjoying the moment and say, oh, I'm so privileged to be here. So I was complaining a lot, so it was time for me to leave. And I had this call from Worcester Warriors, and they said to me, oh, Thomas, it's very simple. Because I had a chat with the coaches, Andy Keast and what's his name?
The coach,
no,
was it
Cecil was the owner of the club. John Brain and Andy Keast. And I said to them, okay, why not? But what is the ambition for Worcester Warriors next season? They said to me, it's very simple, Thomas. There are 12 teams in Premiership. We want to finish 11th. Fucking hell, what an ambition. I spent 7 years at Stade, and the target was to be on the top. But they said to me, we fully understand that, but you have to understand that we will be promoted from Division 1 to Premiership next season. And never, ever in the history of Premiership, the promoted team managed to stay in the Premiership on year one. So that's why if we finish 11, it means that we won't be relegated and that we will be the first team to stay. And that this is a reasonable target for us. We don't want to sell you some dreams and stuff. And I quite like this franchise. Honestly, mm-hmm. Yeah, finally I signed for Worcester. I spent 3 years there. It's great, great, great memories. Lots of a very different approach, rational, organized, very clear players giving 100% every single session. And yeah, it's a great experience for me, mostly in terms of management and find the balance between the enthusiasm and the French culture and the English culture.
Yes. And you said in your book as well, you were a bit taken aback, surprised by the professionalism of the training as well when you arrived. You know, it was much more structured. Spend more time in the gym, you know, gym bunny. do you agree with that? Was it a bit of a shock?
No, it was something different. We had no facilities here in Paris because it's very tough to have stadiums and stuff. So we used to drive for hours and hours to get from the gym to the training camp, then back to the training field and stuff. But it works because we won four times the league, and then I arrived in Worcester with amazing facilities in the stadium. It took me 5 minutes to drive from my house to the stadium, to Sixway Stadium. So yeah, that was a big change. So many coaches available. We have some coach for skills, coach for defense, coach for scrum, coach for lineouts, coach for I've never said that in France. So it was a massive change, and also in terms of mentality. So we spent a lot of times doing meetings, writing things, and having some reflection. I thought the players were a lot more invested in the team, much more responsible than what we used to do in Paris and in Stade Français, where the emotional part was probably the one of our main strengths.
They had a more rational methodology to the players. What about the supporters? Which one was fantastic? How did it differ between the Stade Français
We had public in Stade Français. We had no supporters. We had supporters when we reached the final. Suddenly, we had 50,000, 60,000 supporters wearing the club jersey and having some flags. We are from Stade Français, but yeah, okay, but we haven't seen you for the year.
Okay.
Worcester is obviously a much smaller city than Paris, but there's a culture of sports in England which I quite like. So people knows what is rugby, what is football, what is cricket, and they used to go there with kids and families and sit in the stands, having a sandwich or a couple of beers in the bars at the club or on the car park. So it's a totally different mentality and way of living the sport. We don't have that in France, fortunately.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Worcester Warriors, just to let you know, they are, guess what, they are ranked 11 in the Premiership League table, so they're still then. And number 12 is Gloucester, my goodness, not doing too well. And yesterday you have heard, but
I read that in the news.
So who knows, they might go up.
I wish them too. And sadly, I've heard that Cecil Duckworth passed away. I think it's at the end of the year. This guy was so helpful, so calm. So he's a fantastic person, and he's probably one of the most respectful chairman I've never met.
Yes. Yeah, it did bring lots of sadness, you know, in the rugby world, because he was a legend, very, very passionate man about his rugby, about Worcester. So English. So it became, how was your English when you were there? Did it improve? Did you have to pick up? Did you make a few anglicism? Because when I moved to the UK, I made loads.
I used to learn English at school. But yes. as you can imagine, it's totally different to learn English at school and to learn how to speak English with a proper Englishman. So
yes,
yeah. But I was the only French guy and French bloke in Worcester, so I had no other opportunities than catching the train, and I wanted to communicate. I wanted to settle in the team, so. It took me, months and a half or two to get the words.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you must have been very popular over there.
Oh, yeah, as most of the players in this time, because we, as I said, we reached the target on year one. And so we achieved something for Worcester Warriors that no one have never achieved before. We stayed in the Premiership, so all the supporters were very happy and pushing behind us. So, yeah, the connections between players, supporters were great. It was sort of a family. And on the other hand, they were very respectful. I've never had a word with any one of them, even when we get some bad sequences of results or stuff. They always show us some massive support and massive respect.
Yes, and around that time, also there were a few French players. You had Olivier Mine playing for London Irish, Castagnède as well around that time.
All of them except. Chabal were in London playing for Irish, for Olivier Magne, and Thomas Castagnède playing for Saracens. Then we had some guys also in Gloucester, but not when I was, it was previously with Philippe Saint-André, Olivier Azam, Patrice Collazo, Christian Califano. They played for Gloucester. And other blokes, French blokes played for Sale, when they won the league, like Chabal, Sébastien Bruno, and a couple of others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was the time there were lots of French players in the Premiership. Right now, I think there are none.
Maybe one or two, but yeah, it's not, it used to be a sort of, El Dorado for French players, but now the time changes.
Yeah, absolutely. So 3 years in Worcester, and it was time to go back to France, and you went to play for Racing. So back to your sources.
I was closing the circle.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I was close. I was 32, so playing sort of professional rugby for 15 years, nearly now. So yeah, it was time to say goodbye and to maybe to send some messages also to the youngsters, to help them to develop, and to show them that they've got a nice trip and a nice journey to achieve for the next 10 or 12 years, because it's always the same story. When the end is close, it's time to turn the head and to look backwards and to see, wow, this is the road I've made. But unfortunately, there's no road in front of me. So I need to change now and I need to find another road and to reinvent myself.
Mm-hmm. And after you finish your career in Racing due to not an injury,
medical assessment. They said to me that it's time to close. Yes. You have problem with your heart problem. So yeah, at least someone took the decision for me to say, Thomas, it's time to close the shop.
Yes, but you had such a good career, so many experiences, and you were what, 35 when you retired?
33. I had maybe one or two more years in the motor, but no more.
Yeah, because it does pay a lot of havoc, you know, on your body. You definitely put your body on the line. And got lucky after your career, you moved, you become consultant for Canal Plus and RMC, and it was perfect trajectory for you, because when you were younger, you wanted to become a journalist as well. So, you know, you had a very good life, very good star on the tour of you. You were born on a lucky star.
I wouldn't say that, but it was a smooth transition from rugby players to commentator. Oh, it helps me to keep the link with rugby.
Yes.
I was not on the pitch, but I was on the side of the pitch. So yeah,
yes.
I was still around. So I had no interest in coaching. And it's a great opportunity for me to work for Canal Plus, which is the number one sports broadcaster in France, and also to work for the radio. And I get back with my mate Vincent Moscato at RMC. So yeah, after the great memories we had as players, we could now live differently, but still together, which is good.
That's brilliant. That's such a good omen. And then back again to Stade Français. You were offered the position of president and general manager of Stade Français in November 2019. Mm-hmm. Lots of work to do. Lots of work needed to be done. And it's looking positive. You are going up in the chart. How does it feel? You know, you move from being player to top guy now as a president of a major top 14 club.
When I was playing, I was expecting a team to pick me, and now I have the opportunity to pick my team. Simple as that. Uh-huh. This is probably the only privilege and opportunity for director or president. You have to pick your team, and you have to pick your team for the sports side, coaching team, plus with the coach, obviously, you pick the players, but you also have to pick your team to manage the club, in the administrative parts, commercial, marketing and stuff. And it's a lot of pressure, so you have to take the right decision and to pick the right persons to do this. So, but it's quite enjoyable. I'm very honored to be there. And Stade Français is a fantastic part of my career. I've got the Stade Français colors in my blood. So, yeah, we've got a lot of things to do, a hell of a work to do. But at least the boat is moving now, and we probably have some troubles again, because in sports there's always something you're not expecting to happen. But
like the COVID,
like the results, like the sponsors, we're supposed to be there for 5 years, and from one day to the other said, oh, I'm leaving. So, but that's always something. But we've got a fantastic owner, Dr. Hans-Peter Wild, and he's supporting massively the club, and he's providing everything for us to succeed. which is great. So now it's time, absolutely, for me and for the boys in the team, for everyone to send him back something.
Yeah, and you got a few international as well in your team, such as Gael Ficou.
We've got some Argentinian players like Marcos Kremer, Pablo Matera, the Pumas captain.
Yeah.
Calou, Paul Aloemi, well. Jonathan Danti. Yeah, we used to have a long history with the national teams and provide a lot of international players.
Yes, and via Bernard Laporte and Gattier as well, who played for Stade Français, sometimes as you, I suppose. And finally, okay, how would you make about the French team? You know, it's wow, and I'm very excited about the renewal of Les Bleus. Do you think we're likely to bag the trophy?
I hope so. Everyone, all the clubs are pushing behind the national team. We've been suffering for so long those last 15 years. With the bad results of the team, so now we've got the opportunity to have a World Cup coming home, and we need to be competitive. We missed the chance in 2007, so it's another fantastic opportunity. So let's make everything to be ready. And I'm confident because clubs work hard with the academies and stuff, and we've got some world class player in this team. Mm-hmm. And if you wanna beat the best teams and the big fish, you need world class player. And with the likes of Entamac, Antoine Dupont, and Aldrit, and lots of players in this team, we have no fear against the best players in New Zealand, England, or stuff. So yeah, we've got some work to do. We've got some things to win, because I think that if you want to be identified as a potential World Cup winner, You need to mark memories, and you need to arrive to the competition not as an underdog, but as a favorite, as a winner. Exactly like England did with Clive Woodward when he settled his team 4 years before the World Cup, and on the year before the World Cup in Australia, he beat New Zealand away, Australia away, and South Africa away. So, and that's it. When he arrived to the World Cup, everyone said, "Wow, this is it, and this is England." Of course, it's in Australia. Of course, All Blacks, Australia, France, they've got some good players, but in terms of achievement, no one has never achieved that before, and we've got 2 years and a half now to try to do the same things. So we need to be competitive in the Six Nations. We need to travel in the tours in the summer, and we need to some significant victories away, and of course at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and the club is in good hands with Fabien Gattier, Bernard Laporte, what I'm saying. Raphaël Ibanez, Labitte, and so on. What about your ambition for Stade Français?
When the season dramatically stops last year due to COVID, we were bottom. So we need to stay humble. What we want to achieve and what we want to do is to play rugby with the quality of the team we have. You understand? And let's see. But if we do this, we should be in the first part of the table.
You are already in midway, so it's not too far. Max, lovely Max, prestigious, the famous Max. Course. Are you still in touch with him? Because he's such a creative man. And before we finish that call, is that I love his creativity, his thinking out of the box type. Because he's a, people forget, but he's a solicitor, actually. His career was a solicitor.
He was working and he was owning parts of energy, the radio. So, yes. He changes rugby, and before rugby,
yes,
it changes the radio. As in England, yes. I imagine 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you had only two or three national radios allowed, and this guy organized some manifestation. Demonstration, people in the street, and he make the government change the laws, and the government open for private radios to start. And he was the first one.
Yes,
so
I remember.
So yeah, it's an amazing person, an amazing guy with a crazy life.
Yes, and he did let you study également in which year, which was. Of course. How many times?
The first edition was in 2000, and I left in 2004, so it's probably four.
Oh, that's brilliant. It was all for charity. It's just for our listeners who don't know what Les Dieux du Stade.
Yeah.
You can buy it. It's a calendar in which features some naked rugby man, but with some with a hand or a ball strategically placed in front of their private. This creates lots of buzz and lots of money for charities. And I remember, I think it was one of you, Dominici, who was a naughty boy. Who I think, he kind of prepared himself so that. so that he looked a bit better on the picture, and you held as well Le Brennus with him as well, and with another player.
He was
so if Domi, you want to see Thomas.
Domi was not only spectacular on the pitch; he wanted to be spectacular on the picture as well. So I let you imagine.
I know. I saw
what kind of strategy you could use.
I know. I've seen the pictures. I hope you know he's somewhere in heaven somewhere. You know, having a drink with Lumu and so on. But it's been great speaking with you. It's been a pleasure. I wish you all the best for SAS Français. I think we could have talked even longer, but I'm like you, and I can speak for hours. But you've got a busy job in your hand. I would love to go back to go to Stade Bouin one day. It's one of my ambitions.
Yeah. And our ambition is obviously to have open doors as soon as possible. But realistically, I think we would have to wait.
Yes, absolutely. But hopefully by September, you know, the new season will start with some spectators. But all the best. Merci beaucoup, Thomas. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Et puis,
merci, merci à vous et bravo pour ce que vous faites et à bientôt.
Yes, of course, the top 14 still alive and kicking and rolling on week after week, and you know, some fascinating results last week.
So what happened?
La Rochelle 40, Bayonne 3. Big win for La Rochelle. Mm. Two tries for Bougarit, one for Bergeon, two for Aldrit. The injured guy we mentioned earlier, penalty try. And basically a big defeat for Bayonne, who were 21-3 down at halftime. So, win for La Rochelle keeps them well up in the top echelons of the table.
Agen versus Toulouse, not much to say, not much to report. It was nil to 59. Agen is Garantina to go into the lower league.
Yeah, nine tries for Toulouse.
I know. Yes, they seem to have lost. You know, they have lost their mojos and their raison de vivre in rugby. Different level, different team. Lots of different reasons, but. It's a shame, but you know, it happens to all teams. You know, one day you're at the top of your peacock, and the day after you are just a duster.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Talking of dusters, poor Montpellier, another defeat. I mean, goodness me, they lost 21-16 at home to Lyon, and another defeat for Montpellier. Yes. I mean, they're just sort of going from bad to worse. The talk is now. Of the new coach in the summer, there's some new names coming up, and you know the usual suspects: Jake White, Razi Erasmus, Michael Cechai, who has been at the top of the stakes. So whoever comes in there, if it's one of those three, you know it's pretty high end stuff. But I think Montpellier can sort of forget this season. I mean, fortunately for them, Agen are so sunk without trace at the bottom of the table that Montpellier have no danger of going down. But in another season, you know, it would be pretty precarious for them.
Yeah, it's unusual for Montpellier. They are very much in the red zone. They out of 14 games, they lost 11 times. They're losing Arthur Vincent, who is playing for Les Bleus. Some players were not allowed to play last week. You know, the players.
Yeah, 15 of them on the sound of it.
Yeah. So he only. He no, actually, Saint André, you know, decided to isolate. You know, some of the players, such as Alex Lewowski, Titi Lamositel, and others. You know, just to. For them to improve on some areas of the games.
Yes, yeah.
So yes.
The game on Sunday night was. I didn't get to see any of it, but actually, I'll tell a lie. I did get to see some highlights on the website. But Toulon 35, Stade Francais 13. Four tries for Toulon, 15 points from the boot of Carbonell. But I think the talking point was the red card for Nico Sanchez of Stade Francais, the Argentinian fly half. Just on half time, he cleared out scrum half Baptiste Sarran and made contact to Sarran's head with his shoulder. I mean, totally unintended, but these days with the head injuries, etc., the way they are, he got a red card. And the poor lad was in tears going off. You know, I think everybody felt genuinely sorry for him, but that's the way the game is these days. And Sanchez certainly isn't a dirty player. I mean, it's his first red card in 215 matches, so he'll get the sort of standard ban, but you know, fortunately all was well with everybody else. But you know, Toulon going from strength to strength, a 35-13 win at home is pretty impressive.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And the South African player, I forgot his name.
Estebeth, yeah.
Ibitse, yeah. Was absolutely phenomenal in that game. Yeah, so it really, he did show his experience and his expertise as well at leading the team. From Toulon, we got five that have been called, you know, to the French squad. So Villiers, Serin, Carbonell.
Great score in Scrabble,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
And Olivon, yeah. You know, they're very much, you know, they're going to lose five international. So we'll see how it goes, you know, for the next few weeks. Which game did I see? Yes, we'll talk about Montpellier.
I'll tell you what.
Lyon, Clermont-Castres, 59-19.
Big win.
Yes.
I'll tell you what we'll say. I was looking at some stats, you know, because obviously I've got very little else to do at the moment. But we're actually halfway through the top 14 season now. And as things stand at the moment, Toulouse and La Rochelle would automatically qualify for the semi-finals. And then the barrage, the playoffs for the other semi-final places would be Toulon against Bordeaux and Racing against Clermont. So that's a lot of old rubbish because the season's halfway through. But if the season ended now, that is how things stand. So there would be some cracking games. And hopefully come June, you know, who knows, you might be able to get some fans into these games. The semi-finals are going to be played in Lille and the final in the Stade de France at the end of June. So, yeah, let's hope.
Oh, good stuff. I watched the highlight for Pau versus Brive. Brive is on a winning streak. They won 5 games out of 6 matches.
Yeah,
so something
good.
Really good's happening in Brive. And I put the blame on Saïd Harish, who is the coach, you know, very, very motivated. They've got a very closely band of players together. So that's impressive. They keep going up now. I think they are ranked number 8. Pau, unfortunately, their 5th defeat at home. And they're losing Astoy as well. Astoy is right now with the squad, you know, being trained with them, you know, to help their team. Pau is suffering a bit. And Racing 92 versus Bordeaux Blègle, the score was 32-33. Wow.
No,
did you watch that game?
Was it good?
Yes, yeah, I think it was the one that you were supposed to review, Mike. So,
okay.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize I haven't got that one yet. So, oh well, that's the score. But looking at the table now, yeah. I mean, Toulouse are top with 52 points, La Rochelle second with 49, although they played one game less than Toulouse, and Toulon are third with 42. So, pretty close at the top. And at the bottom, of course, as we mentioned, Port Agen, 2 points from 15 games with no wins. And just up above them with 21 points, Montpellier. So a 19 points difference between bottom and second bottom. So you can't see Agen recovering. I mean, how on earth are they going to recoup those points? So I'm afraid it could be curtains for them already. And look.
And Pro D2, I would love to see the team from my native Brittany, Van, to be part of the Pro 14, top 14 next year. We need a club, you know, from
yeah,
from
it
the
would
north.
Be great,
that
wouldn't
be,
it? Too?
That would be, yes, I know Perpignan is not too far,
yeah,
away
another
as
team
well,
sort
but,
of on the Spanish border, you know, big Catalans. I'd love to see. Love to see them in it, of course, and as you say, a team from Brittany would be nice, just to balance things out,
yes.
To give Toulon a good away trip that they can walk home from. Hey, but this weekend it's more top 14. Friday night we've got Montpellier against Racing. On Saturday, Clermont against Bordeaux. Bayonne against Agen has been postponed because of COVID. Situation, so at least Agen won't lose this week, bless them. Brive are at home to Toulon and Lyon are at home to Pau. On Sunday, Stade Francais, they face Castres at Stade Jean-Bouin. La Rochelle, they're home to Toulouse. So what a cracking game that is. That has got to be the game of the weekend, I think, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I was just looking at the ranking of the Pro 14. The first three are Perpignan,
okay.
Van, Biarritz. So I think any of them, you know, could go up. But you know, being somebody from Brittany, you know, and being able to read some news as well about rugby in Le Telegram de Brest or West of France, you know, brings me lots of joy. It's unusual, but that's a good way, you know, to grow the rugby in
famous names in the Pro de Deux now, aren't they? You look at teams like Biarritz, you know, the great Serge Blanco's club. You know, they've won the Heineken Cup, great team, and now in the second tier of French rugby. So tough league.
Yeah.
Oui.
Plus ça change.
Okay, French lesson.
Okay, so today the question is, how do you say unokon?
Is it lache or something? No, that's...
No, what is it?
Sometimes it's le nokon. No, what is it?
No. Oh, I wouldn't, yeah. To be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised. You never know. You never know. And you say en avant. Yeah, you know, okay. It's forward, obviously.
En avant. Nokon.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think I've heard Wayne Barnes saying that, so I should have picked that up.
Oh, Wayne, yes. He should teach some French someday to... we know who, but it doesn't matter anymore.
Good, because I haven't got one this week. I haven't sort of, it's been so hectic, hasn't it, with the Six Nations and everything going on and the snow, playing out in the snow. I just haven't had time, you know?
And building your snowman. And,
exactly.
You know, walking your dog and time flies away. So how can you tell if a prop is walking, jogging, running or sprinting?
I don't know how.
His expression.
They don't get any better, do they? They really don't.
So I hope you enjoyed our French rugby connections and our latest news about Six Nations, Top 14, and my chat with Thomas Lombard.
Absolutely, was very insightful. Yeah, fascinating. Do you agree, Mike? And yep. Hope you all have a great week. Stay safe, and we'll catch you next week in the final build up to the Six Nations.
And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment, so you'll be the first to hear about our latest podcast.
So it's bye bye from me.
Au revoir, mes amis. Glou 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 font tous les dindons, et la jolie cloche ding ding dong. Mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum. Et c'est l'amour.